The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Tim. How was your weekend last weekend?
It was fantastic.
Yeah? I'll bet it wasn't as good as mine. Well, maybe.
I don't think it was.
Philadelphia was fabulous.
Excellent.
It was fabulous. The weather was perfect. It was sunny and clear. The attendees were fun. They were gracious. They were enthusiastic. And they were plentiful.
It moved to a new location. How did that work out this year?
Well, evidently it was in the convention center last year, but it moved to a bigger hall this year. And it was wonderful. Everything went really, really well. We had a great time. I want to tell those who stopped by to say hello. Thank you. It was really nice to put a face to some of those listeners who sometimes they post on our site, you know. And for those who are listening for the first time because you found out about it at the show, welcome to our show. It was pretty cool. We really had fun. There was no downside, really, other than the fact that we were dead tired. It was busy from, you know, from the gun.
Everybody thinks trade shows are a piece of cake. You just sit around all day and don't do anything, right?
And eat bonbons and watch TV. Yeah, that's right.
Tater tots.
Tater tots, that's
right. Did you get to the tater tot truck?
We never got to the there was a food truck inside. Listen, I had trouble just getting to the bathroom. Brian was able to attend several seminars, and I was not. And that's fine. He busted his little butt at the show, too, helping people put their mirrors on their helmets. So we had a good time, and I think we'll go back next year.
Good.
I just really had a good time. We also got our first taste of the white stuff this week.
Yeah, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Yeah, well, it's beginning to look a lot like traffic jams.
Well, it's you know, by February, we'll
get used to it.
We'll get it figured out.
Hey, you know what? We really shouldn't complain. I got posted on his site, Charles Pelkey, who is, by the way, the newly elected state representative from Wyoming.
Congratulations.
Woo-hoo! Congratulations, Charles. He posted a snapshot of the weather forecast for Wyoming, Laramie, Wyoming. It was 22 below. I have no complaints.
Nope. Cleveland's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. But congratulations on his election victory. I really like that. So, that said, let's talk about our show this week. There's news. In fact, we have quite a bit of news that we'll sandwich in between two interesting interviews. My first guest is not new to the Outspoken Cyclist. She has been on the show before. She is the managing editor of Momentum Magazine, Mia Kohout. The November-December issue just came out. It's about style. But because it's really close to the holidays, I decided to ask Mia about what her selections might be for holiday gift giving. I wanted to know about what's available for kids, parents, families, stocking stuffers. So I'm going to like pick her brain and see what her best picks are. And also what maybe she doesn't like right now. And then after our break, we're going to head to Omaha, Nebraska. All right. So this week, the League of American Bicyclists had an interview with the owner of the Omaha Bicycle Company bike shop. Her name is Sarah Johnson. And if I could rewind myself back, you know, to when I started in the business, I would be Sarah Johnson. She is like fast forwarding into like back into the future. And she is me. I'm telling you, I wanted to speak with her. I feel such an affinity for her when I read the interview that the LAB did. It is in this week's LAB online, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the way she thinks. I like her enthusiasm. I believe that the way she's conducting her business, other bike shops might be interested because they think her style is the future. It's going to be fun. She also said she might be rambling, so we can ramble off together. Let's go to Vancouver, British Columbia. We're going to speak with editor-in-chief of Momentum Magazine, Mia Cohote, to find out what's good for holiday gift giving. Mia, thanks for joining me on the show this evening.
Thanks for inviting me to come back.
I haven't seen you in a long time. I kind of miss seeing you at the shows. I didn't go to Interbike this year.
Interbike was a crazy time, as usual.
As always. So since I really like Momentum Magazine and the way you approach cycling, I thought you would be a great person to talk with about the holiday season and about gifts that might be interesting and useful and hot for families and kids, because, you know, everybody knows that the guy in the kit wants a new pair of carbon wheels, but maybe there's something a little less pricey and more interesting for families and kids. So let's start with kids. What kinds of new cycling accessories or bikes are you recommending for kids?
There are a few really new, exciting, innovative products on the market that I think kids are going to really love to see under the tree this year. My two favorites that I'm going to recommend to your listeners, the first one is the Yuba Flip Flop, and it is a cargo bike for kids. So this bike is the kind of your traditional run bike, except it has a low step over for very young children that you can flip over and make taller for children as they grow up and get a little bit older.
So what would you say the low end of the scale is for the younger child? How young?
Just past walking. I think they'd want to, definitely be able to walk. So probably about between 1 to 2 years old.
How cute is that?
Very, very cute. And it's got a back rack on it so they can learn how to be a cargo biker from when they're a very young child.
Wow. Nice.
Yes.
What else you got?
So my other favorite kids product that I'd love to recommend is the Egg Helmet. And so this is a new kids helmet. It's from the Netherlands. And how it works is that it has a shell. It's a cloth covering, and so you can customize and mix and match the type of covering that a kid can put over on their helmet. So not only can they pick a helmet that they would love, but they can switch it up, which I think is going to keep kids interested and excited with that product.
Now, does it have any option to grow with the kid, or is it specific size, like small, medium, large? Do you know?
Unfortunately, I don't know the sizing.
And what's the name of that?
That is called the Egg Helmet.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cute. So let's stick with kids for a moment. What about some items that parents might get to let their kids ride with them or to keep the kids interested, but something that the parents can use for their children?
Now this isn't a new product, but I know that they have new colors. The best child seat by far that we've seen on the marketplace is the Yes child seat. And it comes in at least 6, if not 8, different colors. So you can really pick one that's going to customize and work well with the type of bike and the color of bike that you ride.
I've always recommended that kids be able to sit up on their own and be able to pull themselves to sitting before putting a helmet on them or putting them in a child seat. Are you still recommending the same thing?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
To be able to sit comfortably upright.
And this child seat, does it ride front or back?
Well, there's a mini version that rides in the front and a maxi version that rides in the back. So you can actually carry two kids on one bike if you so choose.
I'm speaking with Mia Cohote. She is the publisher. Are you also the managing editor?
I'm the editor-in-chief.
The chief. I like it. Of Momentum Magazine. And the November-December issue is the style issue. So let's talk about fashion. I mean, you know, it's important to look good, right?
It's fun to look good.
It is fun
to look good. What I always love to tell people is I think you can look just as good on your bike as you look off of it, and why change in between if you don't have that far to go?
So what kinds of stylish things are you showing this year, or have you found that would be nice gifts for either a husband to give to a wife or a girlfriend to a boyfriend or any combination thereof?
Well, I am so excited about all of the new cycling bags that are available. There seems to have just been an explosion of nice-looking, practical, functional bags in the marketplace. A few that I'm excited about. Timbuktu has just come out with a distilled collection, which is quite an attractive and a lot of variety of different types of bags.
When I think of Timbuktu, I think of messenger bags, but these are other than messenger style?
These are not messenger bags at all. Hmm. They're tote bags and panniers, and they're quite feminine and quite attractive. So I'm very excited about this collection.
Okay. What else?
I'm also really excited about the new waterproof panniers and bags from both Ortlieb and the Canadian company Arkell. They're very attractive and very functional and stylish.
Two of my favorite companies.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Anything wearable? Like, I know that there's an article on your website about wearing a suit when you ride, for example. So what about wearable fashion?
Well, I am always excited to see a man in a suit on a bicycle. I've had a lot of fun on that photo shoot. But one thing that's kind of more wearable bike fashion is cycling jeans. And before it was, they were only for men, but now there's a bunch of companies that have released cycling-specific jeans for women. One is the Dish Pimlico brand. Rafa just came out with some women's cycling jeans, and Club Ride did as well. So that's an exciting new fall trend as well in the wearables.
Nice. Are you recommending any specific items for indoor training for this winter?
I'm very excited about what Lululemon is doing for indoor cycling gear. Lululemon, it's hard to kind of keep up with all of their new products because they kind of launch new products for 2 months and then they're off the shelf. But I know later this winter they're going to be releasing a line of clothing specific for indoor cycling that looks very comfortable and attractive.
Let's talk about stocking stuffers, just little items that might be of interest to anybody who rides a bike.
The first one is going to be a bike speaker. So these are very small contraptions. Right now, Boombotics is a company that I would check out. This kind of handheld speaker that you can attach to your bicycle and listen to music while you ride without having to wear headphones. So that would be one of my top stuffer picks. Another great one on the market, if anyone hasn't checked it out yet, it's called a Clug, C-L-U-G. And this is probably the smallest storage solution for bicycles that I have ever seen. It is, again, this little plastic contraption that fits in the palm of your hand that you can mount on your wall where you can store your hot road bikes, your city bikes, safely in the wall in your house or your office.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it hanging by?
It just mounts. It mounts right into the wall.
No, what does the bike hang by?
It hangs by the wheel.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
And really
so that's called Clug, and they're very inexpensive, so I recommend checking that out.
Okay. So are there any products that didn't live up to your expectations? I know that we don't want to diss anybody, but occasionally something comes in that's been touted very highly and then turns out to be, I'm not so sure, you know?
Yeah, and I'm going to only say this about one specific product, and it's not even a specific brand that I can mention, that I would mention, but I am so disappointed to see city bikes that have disc brakes that don't have a back rack. Because I do not know what happened in the bicycle industry, but something happened where you cannot get it's very hard to find a standard off-the-shelf back rack that fits on bikes with disc brakes.
Which is interesting because the whole point of using a disc brake on, say, a smaller bike is so that you can put a rack back there. Because if you use a caliper or a cantilever or any other style brake mount that goes toward the top, a rack usually interferes with the brake, whereas in a disc brake, nothing should interfere with it.
Exactly. And so we've had a few bikes come to the office that we've been trying to put back racks on because they don't come custom. And we've been very stumped in how to do that. And so that's my disappointment.
Oh, you know what? Send me some pictures. I'll have my genius engineer partner take a look, because those are the kinds of things he loves to figure out.
Okay.
All
okay.
right. Is there anything new at Momentum we should know about at the magazine itself?
I mean, well, other than our new issue that has our holiday gift guide that just came out and is available for purchase either digitally or in print, we have a very exciting contest that launches on Saturday. We've partnered with Schwinn, and we are going to be giving away a family of bicycles. So if anyone would like to win, it's a sweepstakes, bicycles for you and your family. Look on the Momentum website from November 15th to December 8th for your chance to enter, and follow the hashtag #FamilyBike.
Well, that's pretty cool. See, now I didn't even know that. Well, Mia, as always, thanks so much for telling us about holiday stuff. And I hope you have a wonderful holiday. And we'll talk again.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mia Coho joined me from her office in Vancouver, BC, Canada, where she is the big chief at Momentum magazine. Good magazine. I like it.
I love all the ideas that she came out with, even the simple ones. And if you take a look at the Clug, CLUG,
yeah,
it's a very simple.
Is it clever?
Kickstarter project, yeah. Is how it got started, how it was initially funded. It's really simple. It's clever. Yes.
We are going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We'll be right back with some news. Well, Mr. Tim, it's time for some news. What you got?
One of the things that we want to talk about, let's get the legal stuff out of the way. Germany.
Yes.
They are actually looking to unveil a bill that was drafted just recently that they're hoping to pass in Parliament that will come into effect in the spring, that athletes that use banned substances could be jailed for up to 3 years. With dealers and doctors who assist in the doping facing 10-year sentences.
Whoa.
So besides being disqualified in anything else,
right,
you're going to go to jail. Here's the interesting thing. It will not only affect German athletes, but also those caught doping in the country. So they're just want to crack down across the board for anybody that's using them.
So basically they're policing doping,
yes,
in Germany.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. You know, we haven't spoken with Betsy Andreu in a while. And she's back on the scene. This comes from the Daily Mail in the UK. Betsy Andreu reveals intimidation by Lance Armstrong. It starts out, the original whistleblower who helped bring down Lance Armstrong has revealed how she was tormented and intimidated for more than a decade by the cyclist and his allies as they stopped at nothing in their bid to silence her. All this time, Betsy has said that they had done all these things, but she had never actually come out and said, this is what happened. Now she is. Betsy refused to be cowed, even when Armstrong, who she calls a tyrant of the sport, used his power to attempt to destroy the career of her husband and his former teammate, Frankie Andreu, as revenge for her defiance. She was left shaken, you're going to love this, by a chilling voicemail threatening to, quote, break a baseball bat, end quote, over her head, which was among a series of voicemails and emails from friends and associates of Armstrong seething over what they saw as an act of betrayal from within. Andreu has known for 16 years that Armstrong cheated and bullied his way to the top and was one of only a few brave enough to broadcast his deception. Speaking exclusively to the Mail on Sunday, Andreu reveals the climate of fear and bullying in Armstrong's inner circle, experiencing firsthand the lengths he would go to simply protect his lies And he even questions the motive behind his charitable work. It's a long article. It's in the Daily Mail. It's very interesting. And it's unfortunately that, you know, it's back in the news. But now Betsy feels that she's in a good place to be able to really, you know, fill in some of those blanks that she had before been unwilling to talk about.
And I know we've talked about this before, that there are a lot of questions of, you know, what exactly they did. And I think it's good that we're finally able to hear it.
You got it.
Cell phones. They can do lots of wonderful things.
Yes.
They can do some bad things.
Yes.
Let's go according to, this is in the New York Post. I found this, but it's posted all over. City Council in New York is set to review a new distracted bicycling law that, like current rule for drivers, would bar two-wheel bikers from texting or even talking without a hands-free device on their phone.
That's like the earphone thing that we talked about last week.
Exactly. It makes sense. And they actually interviewed a lady who was doing just that while they were just out wandering around trying to see how many people were. And she says, yeah, I probably shouldn't. It would make sense that I don't. And it's a shame that we have to actually go and do that. But it does make sense.
It does.
The other thing with cell phones is we've talked about Strava a lot lately.
Yes.
How people are tracking and posting their neat rides and all the other stuff. Well, the criminals have caught on. And they now say,
I am not surprised.
Oh, look, you posted that you ride your bike from point A to point B and back to point A. And point A is where you have this neat bike. And that's your house. And now I'm going to come and visit you and take your bike away.
Oh, my goodness. So they're using Strava against you.
Exactly. So they're going to see what you post there. It's, oh, I went on this great ride. And they now figure out, oh, this is where you live. And so it's a lot like the GPS systems that people would have stolen from their car.
Right.
They were worried, oh, no, they know where I work. And the worst thing is they know where you live.
Right.
So,
and keep your good bike.
Right. So my advice always is if you're going to start with GPS or put anything, make it your local police station.
Oh, what a good idea. I like that.
Because nobody's ever going to, you know, bother with anything from there.
Yeah, so. No kidding. That's pretty good. This week I was listening to NPR, as I am wont to do in the car, and Lynn Neary.
Yes.
One of the reporters had a conversation with none other than Shannon Galpin.
Good.
About the Afghan women's cycling team. It was a really interesting conversation. It was on Thursday. So if anybody wants to check it out, I think it was part of All Things Considered this past Thursday. But it was Lynn Neary, and it's just a really nice conversation about Shannon with Shannon.
And I think we have a link up on the Twitter page for that.
Oh, okay.
So
cool.
Cycling in Portland, they're always on the edge of a lot of things.
Yes, they are.
They have a new Vision Zero coming into focus in Portland is what the article is about. Vision Zero is zero deaths. They'd like to go a whole year without that.
Well, that's a good, you know, goal.
New York City on Friday is actually starting a symposium of this Vision Zero for all different cities so they can figure out what works and what doesn't work. The interesting takeaway from this article was that they're looking to put in speeding cameras and red light cameras to monitor and to try and cut down on a lot of that. The interesting part for those of us in Cleveland is we just voted away speed cameras and light cameras.
Yes,
that did that. So,
and evidently we voted away $6 million in revenue.
Yes. And I'm just curious to see exactly what their take will be on what that is and if maybe we made a mistake.
One more item that I just want to mention, because it's been quite some time since we spoke with Carlton Reed. He was working on a book called Roads Were Not Built for Cars. It is now out, and all the print copies are gone. So it's strictly iPad or Kindle. You can get it online. And Carlton will be our guest next week to talk about it. He was kind of like eking out chapters so people could get an idea, and it's going to be fun to talk with him next week.
Good.
And so I have a week to finish the book.
Good. Bike Share
yes.
moves to Tampa on the 17th. They're going to do the first phase of launch, and then after that, December 7th, they're going to have a second open of a total of 300 bikes, I think, they're going to have out there. Interesting article about, it's the typical, this is what the bikes are like and all the other thing. But again, the interesting takeaway from this one was the average bike share trip, can you guess how long? 14 minutes.
Really?
14 minutes. I always thought bike share would be somebody grab a bike and go tool around the city for hours.
But they're using them for transportation.
They're using just to get from here to there.
Which was the point.
And this is from Eric Troll from Coast Bike Share Program. Huh. So that's what they've come across with. That's interesting. But great to see Tampa have that too.
Did you see an article about Bernardino this week?
Yes.
An interview? Do you have any news on that?
Yes, we do. While we're getting that right away, have you seen, and there are some awesome pictures on boardpanda.com. It's the solar-powered bike path, and it's in the Netherlands, and it's inspired by Van Gogh's Starry Night. And the path itself...
You showed me this. It is so
actually
cool.
Looks,
it seems to me, though, wouldn't it be distracting to ride and see all this light underneath you? I mean, it lights up like a Van Gogh Starry, Starry Night.
The really neat thing is it's not super bright, so we may be able to, you know, we could probably still ride and not have a problem with it, but it does look really cool. So you can see the pictures from there. So this I got from an Australian news channel. The cycling legend wants justice for the Tour of France.
You're talking about Bernardino?
Yes, Bernardino. Yes. Lance Armstrong has become a stain on the glorious cycling memories of French legend Bernardino, who says he would refuse to speak to the shamed American rider.
Oh.
That's a meeting I would pay to see. Pay-per-view, I think we could take that. Cycling has an unfair reputation over drug taking, according to the five-time Tour de France winner, who marks his 60th birthday on, this would be yesterday.
Yeah, he's, one of the most still a handsome guy. He's a good-looking dude.
60 years old. It's hard to believe that he's 60.
Yeah, really.
But it's a nice article that gets into just how he wishes that cycling could get back to, I think, what we all wish that it would be, and we could get rid of all the doping. And it says, mention Armstrong and his mood darkens. If I met him today, I would not talk to him. I would not even say hello.
Wow.
And Hino was the last French winner of the Tour 29 years ago.
Well, I guess some French cyclists might want to be the next winner of the Tour de France.
I think so.
Yeah, but it ain't happening, as they say. Unless, I don't know if there are any French riders. There were some French riders who did pretty well in this past year's Tour,
yeah,
yes?
It's hit or miss every year. We saw this in the last Tour. How many people dropped out? How many people were injured before it even started? And it's,
yeah, it's
just
true.
And it's as much a team sport as it has ever been.
Yeah.
And I think France has as much chance as
well,
anyone.
We'll see.
But we'll see
watching
after silly season's over and everybody decides what
right,
team they're
exactly
going to be on.
So this is a Cleveland one from Bike Cleveland.
Yep.
I love the name, Cranksgiving.
Yes.
Yeah. So every year, Bike Cleveland does a fundraiser. It's called Cranksgiving. It's very clever. This year it is next Saturday, a week from today, from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. at one of everybody's favorite places, the Beachland Ballroom. It's on Waterloo Road in Cleveland. If you want more information, it is at bikecleveland.org. What we do, our events, Cranksgiving. All money raised and all food will be going to the Cleveland Hunger Network and some of the churches in the Collinwood area. So, yeah, it's a nice event. I used to put on a Cleveland Food Bank fundraiser for many, many years. This year we're not doing it, and I'm really glad to see that Bike Cleveland is doing it. So that's cool. That's cool. Do you have one more?
I did find when the Eno article came up, I followed something else from there, and this is on cyclingtips.com.au. They actually have a documentary called The Hardest Stage, and it has to do with doping in German cycling. Just a coincidence that Germany is doing this, but in 2011, Germany television stations stopped broadcasting the Tour de France, and cycling coverage has drastically been reduced. Its cycling superstars have been cast with a dark shadow after doping admissions in recent past. And current success stories such as Tony Martin, Marcel Kittel, John Degenkolb, and André Greipel are the ones answering for the past generation's misdeeds. The video is it's in German, but if you click on the bottom, you can get subtitles. It's really interesting to see. You know, we're so used to seeing these in their own element at the races where you can get an easy interview with them, and this is something that's taken out of that. I liked it, so...
Okay, then. We are going to take a short break. Evidently, that's all the news that's fit to talk about this week. Well, a lot of it anyway. There was a lot of news this week. I mean, we could have probably gone on and
on.
We're not going to.
No.
All right. So we'll be right back after a break. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And we are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. We're going to head to Omaha, Nebraska with the owner of the Omaha Bicycle Company bike shop. Her name is Sarah Johnson. It's going to be fun. She also said she might be rambling, so we can ramble off together. All right. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for joining me on The Outspoken Cyclist today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
Well, you know, your work caught my attention in the interview that was published in the LAB this week. And I thought I was having deja vu, like, all over, because it's sort of like my story, only fast forward 40 years. You're kind of walking a similar path that I did. And it's pretty exciting watching a young woman do this. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into the bike business.
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that it's like deja vu, because I'm certainly a fan of yours. So this is just fun to be able to talk with you a little bit. But I got kind of hooked on bikes when I was going to the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, studying broadcast journalism, as a matter of fact. And I saw a bicycle for sale on a poster in the dorm room that I was living in. And it was just like, there's other stuff on the poster. This guy was like moving, I think. And it was $100 for a bike. And I was like, whoa, that's kind of a lot of money. But my birthday's coming up. I'll see if my folks will give me $100. So I bought the bike. It was gray. It was boring looking. I wasn't that jazzed about it, but the guy that I bought it from was like, well, you probably want to, you know, get it tuned up. So I took it to Shields, not even like, you know, a local bike shop, just a big box store, because I heard that they had a bike department. So I took it in and told the mechanic that I just bought this bike for $100 and I wanted to get it tuned up, and he started laughing at me, like laughing at me. And I was like, oh no, this is terrible. Here I am, like, trying to get into this bike thing, and I'm already getting laughed at for spending way too much money on this bike. And I was like, can you tell me what the deal is? Is this like, you know, did I just totally get ripped off? And he's like, hold on, Tony, come out here. You got to see this. This girl just paid $100 for this bike. And I'm like, okay, great. Now I'm getting just totally made fun of to multiple people. This is excellent. But it turns out it was a Specialized S-Works dump jumper, you know, cool old chromoly frame. They did. It was like a 93 the last year, I think they did that tube set, and it had a cool, you know, it just turned into a bunch of words that they were saying that I didn't know, but I did know that they said it was cool and that I could sell it to somebody, like, for several $100 more than I just paid. And I was like, whoa, all right.
That's funny. So that was your, cool, like, baptism by fire into the bicycle
exactly,
world.
Exactly, exactly. And then I actually ended up going to a different shop that was closer to campus and kind of started hanging out, because, you know, you get a bike and then you're like, okay, cool, I got a bike. Okay, maybe I need a helmet. All right, I guess I need a lock. And just kind of, it grew from there. And I was working at a really crappy restaurant at the time and hanging out at the bike shop a lot. And they kind of jokingly said, you know, you're here enough, we should probably start paying you. And then, honestly, when my boss at the restaurant couldn't keep his hands to himself, I don't know how much information is too much for your show here, but I quit and walked out and went to the bike shop. And I was like, were you guys serious about giving me a job? And they're like, yeah. So started working there, started racing there, sort of never looked back.
Put that in the context of time.
That was 2000.
Okay, so here we are, 14 years later, and you own your own shop.
I do.
Crazy woman.
Tell me. I know. It really, really was crazy, because I was at that shop was called Cycle Works in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I love the Cycle Works dudes to this day. I'm still. That's what's so fun about the bike industry is, like, I have friends across the country now because of our two-wheeled, you know, shared passion. So, but Cycle Works is a great shop. That was kind of what taught me, you know. Well, you're constantly learning, obviously, but that was the first foray into bike craziness. And then I moved back to Omaha, and I attempted to use my journalism degree for approximately 7 weeks. I sold advertising and cried myself to sleep more times than not, because it was, I'm the kind of person, like, I'll do a good job at something if I believe in it, but if you, like, obviously this is radio, can't see what I look like normally, but it's, if I don't have bike grease somewhere on me, like, that's a sharp day, you know, I'm looking good. But selling advertising, I had to dress up, I felt like a prostitute, frankly, and so I really felt out of place. Someone gave me really good advice after I took the job, of course. They said, if you ever have to buy a whole new wardrobe for a job, probably not the job for you.
That's a very interesting statement. I kind of like that statement.
I've told people that time and time again, because I was like, wow, you know, because you, if you have to change your facade, well, what's that about? You know, like, why can't you just be who you are and have something that pays the bills? So I went crawling back to the bike shop and then ended up moving to Omaha and worked briefly at a Scheels and then got recruited from there to open a Trek store, met the man of my dreams, who lived in Colorado. So then I moved out to Colorado, and he and I opened a little bike and coffee shop up there in Grand Lake. And, kind of had a little bit of figuring out to do before I realized he was not, in fact,
the man of your dreams.
So there's, like, I think probably several times throughout the story of my last, 15 years, there are the words, came crawling back. So at that point, I came crawling back to Omaha. And got a job with the same dude that owned the Trek store that I helped open before I moved to Colorado, and asked him if he needed any help, and he said, heck yeah, I need actually an assistant manager at my South store. So I went back there, and I wasn't going to do anything for a while, because at that point, you know, I was, like, living in my parents' basement, going through a divorce, just, like, I can't really sit still well, though, or not have a project. And even though I told myself, all right, Sarah, don't do anything drastic, just, like, breathe for a minute, how many months would that have been? Probably like 5 months after I started working at that shop, this random couple of guys came in and they were test riding some bikes, and they lived downtown and there wasn't a bike shop downtown yet. And I said, there should be a bike shop downtown. We should open one, just like as a joke. And then that joke turned into a reality. And so, yeah, that guy was just not really a bike person, just kind of an investor and like RagBri. And I had obviously had some years in the business, and so I built that shop, and then it got bad, and I got fired out of the blue. And all of my customers said, well, we're never going there again. Where are we going? And I said, that is a fine question. Where are we going? So we came to Benson and tried it here.
I'm speaking with Sarah Johnson. She is the owner of the Omaha Bicycle Company, and she's a hoot so far. Yeah, so, okay, where are you?
It's a neighborhood in Omaha called Benson. That's a little part of Omaha.
Okay. How big is your store?
Oh, man, tiny. It's about 1,500 feet.
How big is your coffee shop?
Well, the coffee shop is the front half of the bike shop. So I like to call it the retail mullet. Bikes in the back, coffee in the front.
Right.
It works.
It sounds like it. You've integrated those two businesses, but more than that, and one of the reasons I really wanted to get your story was about the work you do in advocacy and how important and integral it is to your store. So you think it's a good recipe for success?
Well, I am not a numbers person. I, in fact, hate QuickBooks. I do not like money. I tell you what, that stuff is like my worst nightmare, but I fumble through it in order to be able to do the fun stuff, which is talk to people about bikes and over-caffeinate myself on a daily basis. But kind of the story behind, like I said, I had a bike and coffee shop with my ex in Colorado. And so when this opportunity to do something new in Omaha came up, I was like, you know what, Benson's kind of a funky, like, arts and entertainment district. It's a bunch of, like, young, broke people seeing what they can come up with. So that's kind of what we did here. And the coffee shop part's cool because, you know, when I was down at the last shop and even in Colorado, like, people always, I would have meetings with people and I would go to a coffee shop and pay, you know, to have coffee to talk with someone. And I thought, well, wouldn't that be cool if the people that want to meet with me would come and pay me $3 to talk to me rather than me pay $3 to go have them talk to me someplace else. So it's kind of just turned into, you know, I refer to it as like our clubhouse kind of. It's just like we've, it's been con- called a conspiracy den, all sorts of fun stuff. But yeah, basically a bunch of people that are trying to change Omaha hang out here and talk about what we're going to do to make that happen.
Before we get more involved in your advocacy work, and I do want to talk about it because you've done some really interesting things and you've gotten a lot of things done, which is even more better.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. Be proud
sort
of yourself. Pat yourself on the back. Tell me about your philosophy with competing with, say, an Amazon or a big box store. How do you counter the comments that go on all day, every day on, you know, with among the other bike dealers around the country who were just so scared of this stuff?
You know, I think part of what is, and I don't know if it's good or bad, but I don't pay attention to a lot of that stuff, frankly. Like, I don't, you know, someone will come in and be like, oh, I saw this helmet on Amazon for like $20 less. And I'm like, oh, well, did you get to try it on? And did you get to high-five the person who's helping you fit it? And did you get to have a cup of coffee and, like, laugh about what you, you know, had for breakfast? And did you, what if Amazon does not do these things for you, you jerk? So I shame people into it. But honestly, you can't get customer service on the internet. And when your bike breaks down that you bought on, you know, Performance or wherever, you're going to have to either learn how to fix it yourself, which I suppose there's YouTube videos for at this point, so maybe I'm proving myself wrong as I speak, but you're probably going to need to have a tune-up at some point. You're probably going to need to buy something and not have to, even overnight, it's not going to be fast enough at some point. So I guess mostly I don't pay attention. Secondly, I shame people. And third, I just count on reality.
Well, reality is a good you know, touchstone. So let's talk about your product offering, because one of the comments you made in your interview with the LAB was how women are reluctant to spend a lot of money personally, which is something I've said for years and years and years and years. How do you see that changing? Do you see that changing? And how are you changing it?
You know, that's a good question. I think that it is changing to a degree, but I would still say that it, from my experience, women seem to be, I will say, smarter about how they spend their money. And so it's not as, you know, it's not like, okay, I'm going to walk in and buy this bike right now and let's do it. It's like, okay, I would like to know about this bike. I would like to ask questions. I would like to research on my own. I would like to touch base with you maybe 3 times, and then I feel comfortable giving you my money, which I respect the hell out of, because I don't have a lot of money. I don't like money. And if I'm parting ways with a big chunk of it, it better be the right decision. So totally, you know, that's something that I respect. And I am a big fan of quizzing someone. People come in and they think they're buying a bike and they actually get an interview. And that's what I always joke with. Like, you think you're here for a bike. Well, guess what? I got a list of questions for you before I even look at bikes with you. So it's just, I love it. I love having women come in here. You know, we talk about, oh, you know, this saddle, it hurts to go to the bathroom after I ride this. What's the problem? You know, it's a lot of very candid conversations that I hear day in and day out. I would never have this conversation with a guy. I'm so glad you're here. So that is worth all of it. You know, like, I love that, because again, after being literally laughed out of the first shop I ever went to years ago, it's something I certainly don't think anyone else needs to experience.
Did you ever think that maybe we should write a book about some of the funny stories that go on
Let's
in our shops?
It. Oh man, I like to write. I have a journal. Well, I have several, man. When I die, some weirdo finds these journals.
You got to burn them first.
I really probably should, frankly, but I've, you know, started writing who knows how many books over the years, just, you know, that consists of ideas and concepts and like an outline, and then I get bored of it. But Found by Bicycle, that's the title of the one that might actually turn into something.
That's
and it's going to be about relationships and about experiences and about travel and funny experiences, and it all revolves around the bike.
I'm speaking once again with Sarah Johnson, owner of the Omaha Bicycle Company, little shop up in the Benson neighborhood of Omaha. Let's talk a little bit about your work in advocacy. You actually were able to have a new government position created in the Office of Public Works. Tell us about that and how it relates to cycling.
Yeah, so about that. That was what was supposed to happen. And since that interview that I did with LAB, the mayor, our dear, dear mayor, the first woman mayor for Omaha, so I wanted to be so excited about it, but holy buckets, am I not excited. Well, I'm excited, but not in a positive way. She is not my favorite person. I am, you know, outspoken about that. And she knows that she's called me out on public media and said Sarah Johnson, blah, 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 which she lied about. So not a huge fan of what's going on. One of those things is she is not actually putting that position into play.
What?
She cut the, yeah, so the you know, I'll try to keep it sort of a short story, but my friend and colleague Carlos Morales is currently still through the end of the year, the bike and pedestrian coordinator for the city of Omaha. And I had him come speak to Mode Shift Omaha, which is a nonprofit that I'm on the board of, and had him come speak to one of our groups, you know, at a meeting, and about just kind of updates about what was going on in the city with bike stuff and if his position was at risk with the new administration, because the new mayor is not really into bikes or much that's cool. But anyway, he said, no, you know, I've got funding lined up. Even if she doesn't want to fund me, I've got stuff coming in, like it shouldn't be a problem. Literally the next day, I get a phone call from him saying, have you read the budget? And I'm like, dude, I don't know who you think I am, but no, I've not read line by line that boring multi-page document. He's like, well, I'm gone. It's like, what? He's like, yeah, not a position for me. I got crossed out of the budget. And I was like, okay, is this public? And he's like, well, not really. And I was like, okay, let me ask you questions and you pretend like I'm not me, and then you tell me what you can tell me. So basically I found out that if I were to have read the budget and I were to have noticed that there was a level 3 planner position missing and I would have asked him if that was him, he could have said yes. So I said, all right, got to go. I hang up. I start like calling the newspaper, calling the TV station, like blowing this up publicly because it was just going to slip by and I don't know what would have happened if someone didn't, you know, make a big deal about it.
Sure.
So we actually, when I say we, a lot of times I mean Mode Shift. We kind of just started this media campaign, and I have a fair amount of contacts with the media from just over the years, different stuff we've done. And so we had a rally to kind of, you know, well, we pissed off the mayor, frankly. She pulled a bunch of us into a room a few weeks later, and she wasn't happy with us. She's like, we need to stop the rhetoric. No more social media. No more this. I'm doing this for you. We got her attention, is one way to put it. But we had about 300 people show up on a really rainy, crappy day to show the support for the position. And we wrote a bunch of letters to city council and actually worked pretty closely with one of our council members who proposed an amendment to the budget that would retain that position and actually move it to public works. Well, that amendment got passed, and then she vetoed the amendment, and so now it doesn't exist again.
Whoa. So but between the time you did the interview and the time... Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Vetoed it?
Yes, indeed.
So what is her issue with having... Besides the fact that it's a budget, a line item in the budget, what is her issue, do you think?
She says it's unnecessary, and we don't need to spend money on it. Her solution is to form a volunteer advisory committee, which... P.S. I've been harassing her about for the last, like, I don't know how many months to reinstate this BPAC committee, Bike and Pedestrian Advisory Committee to the mayor. It was in effect. I was on it with the previous mayor. When she came into office, it dissolved because she didn't think that it was necessary. Well, now she has coined her own term, the ALAC committee, which stands for Active Living Advisory Committee. So, you know, since it's her idea now, it's a good idea. And so I applied to be on the committee. She told everyone that by the end of October, she would have the committee seated. Well, guess what? It is now mid-November, and I have not heard back. I've emailed them a couple times. I'm not getting return emails. So she's breaking promises once again. And she's going to, you know, I'm not going to say, well, she's going to hear about it. Like, I'm not one to be quiet about my feelings. And
was she elected on any kind of transportation
budget cuts?
That was why she was elected. Oh, cut the budget. Okay, slice the budget. Okay, well, all right. So you're still involved in advocacy. Obviously, you're still working hard on that stuff. Let's talk a little bit about your sense of humor, because it's wicked. I want to ask you a couple things on your website, because it cracks me up. You say right at the beginning, we like steel. We like wool. Steel wool. That's just okay. So do you...
That's true.
Do you sell other than steel bikes? Do you sell carbon? Do you sell aluminum? Do you sell, you know, anything else? Titanium?
We stock, like if you come into the shop right now. Well, first a couple things about the sense of humor. One, I did in fact get voted best sense of humor senior year of high school, and I'll never forget it. It was magical. Secondly, I need to give credit to Vince Esta, who does a lot with our website. That was his little quip.
It's
which
awesome.
Is true. We do. He's awesome. He's hilarious. He's been a buddy of mine. He's funny. He holds down the fort when it comes to website stuff. I mean, we tag team it, but that was him.
Do you have a squirrel?
We have two squirrels.
You do?
It is strange and creepy. Yeah. So I have a golden retriever who used to come with me to the old shop all the time. But now that we do food, you know, we just do like muffins and scones with our coffee here. So she, her name's Copper. She does not come to the shop as frequently as she used to because she is, in fact, a big fan of muffins and scones. And
probably squirrels, too.
And squirrels, for sure. So anyway, couldn't bring Copper. My mom's in real estate. My mom was de-junking this house that was about to be foreclosed on and or had been foreclosed on. And found this little gross, weird taxidermied squirrel in this house, and she brought it to me as a joke, not thinking that I would embrace this darling little squirrel and kind of turn into the new shop mascot. So that's the first squirrel. And then a customer of ours brought in his strange and creepy taxidermied squirrel that did not have a left paw, and so that one's name is Lefty. We have fabricated a prosthetic hook for Lefty. He now has a hook made out of a spoke and a CO2 cartridge. He helps out when he can.
At least he's useful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he kind of keeps an eye on the front door. He sits on a tandem that's hanging by the front door. And then the other one is in a little glass case on my file cabinet.
I see.
Uh-huh.
What's Petal Happy?
Petal Happy. Okay. So another advocacy endeavor. I used to be pretty heavily involved in Omaha Bikes, which is a little advocacy group that now is actually kind of revitalized and trying to, you know, formalize a few things and become like a legit 501c3. But when I formed Pedal Happy, it was because Omaha Bikes had like collapsed and it was not being run well, in my opinion, and it was kind of controlled by this larger like healthy living initiative nonprofit, and they were making decisions for Omaha Bikes even though they weren't at the meetings, and I got pissed off and kind of stopped. Well, and busy. And then stopped going to the meetings. And then in May, a couple years ago, and that was the first month that Omaha Bikes didn't have a meeting. And I was like, well, that's baloney. Like, you can't ditch a bike advocacy organization. Bike month, that's just blasphemy. So I was like, well, I'm going to just have a potluck. So we're going to have a place where bike geeks can still hang out and eat and drink and talk about bike stuff. So the Pedal Happy Potlucks were formed, and it's awesome. It's super fun. It's super casual. There's no agenda. There's no, like, minutes. There's no voting. It's just like, hey, what meeting did you go to? You want to report about it? Hey, this is awesome pumpkin pie. Who brought this PBR? Why are you riding bikes? What do you want to improve? A lot of it kind of revolves around the lack of a really good commuter map in Omaha. There's been this other group, again, working on getting a map going, and it has been 2 years since they've updated it, and they've been saying for 2 years, oh, it's almost done, it's almost done. So what I wanted to do was like a for us, by us bike map, and so we kind of just get together and draw on our own map and compare routes and are working on getting that kind of published, and I got a lot of ideas, but that's kind of one. That's where Pedal Happy came from.
Why don't you run for mayor?
Ah, you know what? I've heard that, unfortunately, a time or two, and you know, it's because I like honesty. So, yeah, I won't ever do it.
So, do you have a favorite bike right now?
Oh, golly, that's tough. Okay, well, then I will just pick two, honestly. I just built, well, with the help of Vince, a weird yellowish long-haul trucker disc 650B retro shift. So that's what I got going on the trucker. And then I have a burly rock and roll tandem that
wow.
I really like. Yeah.
Wow. No kidding.
So I'll limit it to two. That's
all right.
That's it. I also have a Linsky 650B mountain bike that I like.
Oh, you like 650B, huh? Yeah, that seems to be the hot ticket these days.
You know, it's kind of nice because, like, I'm about 5'11", so I was riding 29ers for a long time. I used to race mountain bikes and stuff a little bit and liked the big wheel thing because it, you know, just was easier. You don't have to pick as much of a line because big wheels keep on rolling. But they felt a little harder to handle. And the first time I rode a 650B mountain bike off road, I was like, whoa, this is the deal. So I just kind of went with it.
What's your hot ticket for the holidays? What's selling well at your store?
Oh, well, we just got these weird new hoodies in with a squirrel holding a Campy peanut butter wrench. So those are hot. But I don't know. Yeah, we also have wool jerseys that people are freaking out about right now. Crane bells are super popular.
Wow.
I don't know. Yeah, flask cage holders, you know, that Ahern makes.
That's cool.
Good stuff.
Flask cage holders. I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
So this has been just an awesome conversation.
I'm so happy. This was super fun.
Well, I am glad you enjoyed it. And we'll keep watching Omaha Bicycle Company. I hope you have a wonderful winter and come out shining in the spring for a great spring selling season.
Thank you. Me too.
You're welcome. Talk again.
All right. I hope so.
Okay, that was a hoot. Sarah Johnson joined me from her shop in Benson neighborhood of Omaha, Nebraska. I knew she was going to be fun. She is just hilarious. Well, I hope you enjoyed our show for this week. It is snowing and nasty and cold here in Northeast Ohio. I hope it's nice enough where you are to go for a ride. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.